This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios basement at my house. It is the Matt McNeil Show, coming to you live for a Thursday. Matt and Patrick there. Patrick, can you hear me? Am I coming through? Am I a sparkle in your eye right now?
I've never heard anything better in my life.
You need cable. All right. So, well, it's good to be with you today. Not in studio. I indeed am broadcasting from the palatial McNeil compound here in H-Town. Shout out to my home dogs in H-Town, Hopkins, of course. As what had happened is, in case you missed last week's shows and me basically screaming at the top of my lungs about what was about to happen, I had hip replacement surgery. So I basically have been in a lot of pain. If you wonder what that's like, go Google it. It's a delight. Needless to say, once the Black & Decker guys got done with my hip, I stayed a night at the hospital, delightful, and came on home, and I have been basically trying to figure out how to use crutches again for the first time in a long time, and walking around and basically venting and fuming constantly because I'm not doing a radio show, and dear God, I can't believe these people are doing what they're doing. But indeed, we decided, guess what? We're going to try to do this because nothing, I think, makes better radio than a fairly drugged out individual sitting in his own basement ranting aimlessly into a microphone. I mean, that's just good quality entertainment. I don't care how you cut it. So, but have you guys missed me? Have things been going okay there?
No, we need you back here.
You guys are desperate. I mean, seriously, it's like a lost puppy dog. For God's sakes, go find a better house. thank you to the guys who filled in for me. That's very nice of you. It was very nice as I was. If it's any joy to you, I made the mistake, Patrick. We did not set a timer one night in the overnight for me to take my pain medication. So I had 7 hours of glorious sleep to be woken up by a slight movement in my hip going, ah! And so It's working now though, and hopefully things will be better. I mean, the prognosis, the way these hip surgeries go nowadays, I mean, the replacement joint's going to outlast me by a few decades at least, and the reality is I'm glad I've got this done. I mean, it's one of those things. It's 53 years old. It is a little humbling to have to admit and say to yourself, boy, do you need to actually have a major surgery at this age. But the reality is I got to tell you the truth. I'm glad I got it done. And what everyone says is the same thing, is that, you know, once you get this done, that you will, you know, it's only a matter of time before basically what happens is you get back and you realize, oh my gosh, why didn't I get this done before? So, and like I said, this joint that they put in on me, it's going to last me forever. I mean, I won't be able to, you know, skip through the check-in over at the airport nearly as quickly as I used to, because I've got a metal part like a Bond villain or something. But needless to say, I'm kind of glad I got it done. I want to, if I may, take a time here, because I've unfortunately had to fortunately and unfortunately. Unfortunately, I've been in the hospital quite a bit this year, and but it's also fortunately given me the opportunity to get a frontline view of what exactly the medical industry has been going through in regards to the coronavirus and the things going on. I want to start by saying that I was over at Methodist, and once again, pound for pound, that hospital is fantastic. A big shout out to Becky, who is my nurse for a good chunk of my stay there. She's absolutely a fantastic woman and true compassion. I mean, just exactly what you expect of a nurse, someone that just cares about people and just was wonderful. So if you go into the hospital, and the way that things pre-COVID were set up is if you had surgery scheduled for a day, you'd go in and you'd check into this one wing where they had kind of a prepper holder room in the area. And you would go there, and they'd kind of, you know, shave you if you needed to be. By the way, my bad on that one. Furry as a goat. I know. You can sell that by pound, though. It makes great insulation. I'm sorry about that. But shave you, give you any, like, the IVs, give you any shots that you need, polish you up, make sure that they're operating on the right limb. They came in, it's like, it's the left one, right? I said, yes, it's the left one, not the right one. I said, no, it's the left one. Mark it now, and don't put any notifications on the other side. But these are kind of like setup rooms. They're not designed for long-term stays. They don't have an individual bathroom in each room and stuff like that. That's kind of something you get in the regular hospital rooms. These are kind of just, like I said, they get in there. I had hernia surgery, 4 years ago? And that was outpatient. And when I had that, they put me in one of those rooms afterwards while I recovered until it was time to boot me out the door and say, good luck with your new abs. And I was like, these aren't a six-pack. And, you know, you get my point. It's not designed for long-term stay, which was kind of interesting when I woke up in recovery after the surgery. So they shave me, they IV me, they get me, you know, where I'm cleaned up a little bit. And they basically then, they do the surgery. It's done in about 2 hours. And for some patients, it is outpatient, which is just amazing. It really is. That is, in my mind, just an amazing thing. The reality is, though, that I wake up and recover, and they say, well, we're trying to get you a room. And I'm like, well, where are you guys going to get this room at in the hospital? Because I thought, I mean, I've been paying attention. I do kind of have my finger on the pulse of the coronavirus crisis. I've been kind of paying attention, and I know they didn't have a lot of rooms. They put me in one of those staging rooms. And this is actually pretty brilliant by Methodist, if I can say, because it's not like there weren't bathrooms on the floor, but it was a way for them, if you had surgical patients who needed to stay overnight, who were only coming in for the surgery, you could keep them in those rooms in their own kind of section of the hospital and not have to worry about any kind of cross-contamination and open up as many other rooms as possible. I thought that was actually quite brilliant. And yeah, it did create a fun little excursion. Matt's first walk late same day after the surgery where I had to go to the bathroom. And even though it was only like 4 doors down, that was a delight. Oh my God. more OxyContin. More painkillers. Oh, but I managed to, I did 3 walks on that first day. 3. Gosh. I was amazed, and I am amazed, the whole process. The next day, I was in the hospital. They basically took me down to physical therapy, could make sure that I could, you know, stuff like get into a bathtub, get into, you know, work in the kitchen, stuff like that. And I was able to show them I could do the basic stuff, and they were like, fine, get going. The crazy thing about hip replacement surgery as opposed to, like, knee surgery, you have tons of rehab. There's not a lot of rehab with this. And they basically, your first week, which I'm kind of at the end of my first week, I had a surgery a week ago on this last Friday. After the first week, you know, you're in pain, you know, mission accomplished there. The second week, you're kind of still in the pain, but you're coming off the pain meds. So it's kind of an iffy kind of a week. But then everyone says the third thing. And by the third week, you're like, wow, I can move again. This is amazing. This is just great. I can't. Wow. Fantastic. So that's kind of where I'm looking forward to. I'm working the third week, and yeah, it might be a few months before I can go back to the gym and like weight train and anything like that, but the reality is I'll be back to hiking in the parks here before probably around Thanksgiving. Maybe not long hikes, but I should be able to get some hikes in before too long, and I can't wait for that. Just right in time for the slippery conditions for me to fall and break the other hip or something. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. You are more than welcome to give us a call today if you would like to say hi or anything like that. Like I said, coming to you live, this is not a joke, not a thing. I am literally in my own house right now doing this. And this is the craziness of modern technology, is that it is amazing that you can kind of do one of these things and do it so fairly clean. I mean, it sounds, you know, I don't sound as good as I am in the studio, but I sound pretty good, right, Patrick?
Sound great.
That's sorry, did I interrupt here? What sports broadcast were you watching there, Patrick?
Oh, I was getting set for World Series Game 3. Oh, that's tomorrow.
No, that's tomorrow. Don't watch that, man. Oh, it's your, okay, your two choices are the cheaters or the team that just can't stop being racist. Yeah, it's not, trust me, my wife and my girls, they have heard enough of me in my rants about the Houston Astros in the World Series. I will say one thing I really feel bad about is that because of this, and Sven Sundgaard's going to join us. It's usual Thursday with him. He'll join us coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk to him about the weather and how things are going there. But we have talked the last few times we've had Sven on, and the reality is that we are 2 to 3 weeks behind where we should be. I should have had my first major leaf raking done and the gutters done before I had my surgery. And literally on the Thursday before the surgery, I'm out there looking at the yard and I was like, there is nothing here for me to rake up. It was just starting to fall and there was nothing there for me to do. And so I ended up, you know, now because of the hip, oh, my hip, I can't do the yard work. I have to commend my daughters and my wife. They basically have had to, they did a great job on the gutters. I supervised. I was like Potter in It's a Wonderful Life in my little wheelchair. Like, you missed a spot, you know. I that George Bailey needs to be taken down. I was watching out the window as they're dangling from the rooftop at the Palatial McNeil Broadcasting Complex. As they cleaned out the gutters, they did a fantastic job. They did. I can say that without a doubt in my mind because I didn't do it. They did, so. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, let's start off with the coronavirus update. We'll get just the numbers here because obviously, I might take a few days off, but this is a story that does not stop. And if I can, one doctors and the nurses who are in all the hospital staff that you are working there, my God, bless you all. You are magnificent. And you not only did not sign up for a pandemic, you sure as heck didn't sign up for delusional nutbags. And I talked to every person I talked to, they said they had at least one story of some person who's like, why aren't you giving me the horse dewormer? You know, or COVID's not real. And you're like, really? Really? Even in the Twin Cities where we're supposed to be kind of this highly educated group? Nope. Get a lot of people. They said that they one woman, and I'm going to say off the record, she said, I don't really look forward to when they have a patient that's transferred from outstate into the hospital because it's literally like you have to explain this entire crisis from the beginning because at no point have many of these people even heard the beginnings of the truth about COVID. And they have to explain to them, oh, no, this is a serious pandemic. Yes, lots of people have died. Lots of people are sick. Hospitals are overwhelmed. This is not a myth. And for many of these people, especially coming from outstate Minnesota, it's the first time they've ever heard this, that they have been able to wrap themselves in a media narrative that is so, you know, COVID doesn't exist. It's crazy. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,690 new cases, 41 newly reported deaths, all the failed cases happening in October. The state's total death now count is at 8,653. Just imagine. Imagine someone being told, oh, yeah, well, you know, 8,653 people have died. And they're like, no, they haven't. It's only been like 50. And you're like, no, we almost had 50 today, 41. It's 8,653 people. I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like for an individual who has literally not educated themselves on the basic news of this to all of a sudden get this news story handed down to them in its reality, and it's as ugly as it is. As of October 26th, the state reported that 3,463,647 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,295,825 people have completed the vaccine series. The state administered 345,734 third dose booster shots. Through October 27th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 293. That's up from 211 on Wednesday. It had been going down, but now back up again. Of those hospitalized, 211 are in intensive care. 712 are in general hospital care. The ICU bed availability is still the toughest. If you look around the state map, there's only 11 ICU beds available in the entire Twin Cities metro area. That's the seven-county metro area. The southeastern part of the state, there's nine. But up in the northwestern part of the state, one. There's one staffed ICU bed available up there right now. Some of the parts of the state are better. In the west central part of the state, they've got eight beds. But, I mean, they're once again, the west central and the southwestern part of the state, they're fairly quick to ship their patients into other areas because they have so few beds to begin with. Eight available in west central Minnesota, five available in southwestern Minnesota. There's only three beds available in south central, in the St. Cloud area, mid-central part of the state, seven beds, and up on the Iron Range, and the northwest or northeast area, six beds there. As far as non-ICU beds, 39 available in the Twin Cities metro area, 50 available down in the southeast, down in Rochester area. The rest of the state looks relatively well there. And that's not a surprise. Once again, there is a difference between staffing ability, equipment, stuff like that when you're looking at the difference between staffed ICU and non-ICU beds. Of the 2,690 positive results on Thursday's update were from 40,355 completed tests, creating a test positive rate of 6.66. Once again, we need to be low below 5% for at least 2 weeks to keep the economy open. So that gives you, once again, an idea of how rough things have been going there. Let's take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. You're more than welcome to give us a call. More on coronavirus update, other things I've got to get to as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show, live from my basement, right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The Matt McNeil Show, once again, not in studio, at my house. Hey, maybe I'll have someone deliver food while I'm here. I got to actually take medication while I'm on the air, which is, that's going to be just great radio right there. Get ready for me to get drugged up a little bit later on. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I know the station management right now is a little concerned about this little ploy, McNeil. Don't worry, I'll be fine. They haven't released the latest numbers of the counties in regards to COVID cases. COVID-19 cases are still rising in parts of Minnesota. The majority of counties have actually experienced a drop for the second consecutive reporting period. The case rates are based on the number of confirmed cases over a one-week period presented per 10,000 residents. Of the week ending October 16th, the State Health Department reported just 12 counties with a higher case rate compared to the week prior. There were 34 counties in the last week's reports, 51-2 reports prior. So, it's definitely, you know, getting better to a point, but still we have a lot we have to work on. The 2 weeks ago, there are 38 counties in the case rate of 50 per 100,000, 35 counties, 50 plus last week's report. This week only has 19 but still Monument County, 90.8 is still pretty high. That's cases per 10,000. That's a lot for Monument County. Wadena County, 73.3. Pope County, 71.9. Todd, 71.6. Fillmore, 61.8. Morrison, 59.5. Beltramian, Yellow Medicine County, 58.8. Traverse County, 58.6. Martin County, 58.1. Cass County, 54.4. Redwood County, 54.1. Murray County, 53.9. Brown County, 53.2. Mille Lacs is 52.9. Chippewa, 52.5. Marshall, 52.2. Norman is at 50.3. And Lac-Qui-Claire is 50.2. There are the 10 lowest case rates, according to the most recent reports. Couchiching County, which, once again, it's hard to gauge Couchiching. Couchiching a few weeks ago was one of the worst counties in the state, but they seem to have gotten things under control. There's not a lot of people in Couchiching County. I'm just going to let you know. But they're down to 11.9, which is quite good. Pipestone is at 12. They've always been fairly good out in Pipestone County. Cook County, another county that's done relatively well, 15.1. Ramsey County, 16.7. Houston County, 18.2. Winona County, 19.1. Rock County is 20.2. Hennepin County, 21.1. Rice County, 21.7. And Le Sueur, Washington, 22.2. Once again, when you factor in the basically the fact that the vast majority of the population of this state lives in the metro area. 55.5% of the twins of the state's entire population lives in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. When you factor that in and then you factor in these other numbers, it still is really atrocious how bad the rates are out in outstate Minnesota. They are by far, it's a far more dangerous place to be in regards to coronavirus. They're just, it is. Minnesota parents looking to vaccinate their grade school kids against COVID-19 will have multiple options to getting a shot. Governor Walz's administration announced this on Wednesday. Vaccinating younger kids will help curb the spread of COVID-19 as families prepare to gather for the holidays. We hear it indoors for the winter. While children are at lower risk of serious illness, about 45,200 have contracted the virus in Minnesota since July 1st. Per the state's top health official, more than 300 have been hospitalized. State officials are planning to roll out vaccinations for 5 to 11-year-olds in anticipation of the federal government expected authorization of the Pfizer vaccine for the younger kids. The vaccines could be available as soon as Monday, contingent on final approval. About 510,000 kids will be newly eligible for the shot, according to Walz. Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm says the state is expected to have 170,000 children's doses at the time of approval, with more to follow. This is a real exciting development. It comes at a critical moment as we are definitely seeing a high level of case transmission in the state, Malcolm said on Wednesday call with reporters. Free shots will be available through more than 1,000 providers and sites, including pediatrician offices, tribal health agencies, and pharmacies. At least 20 schools will offer vaccination clinics with a focus on high-need areas over the next month. Capacity of the state's vaccination site at the Mall of America will also increase up to 1,500 shots per day. They caution, though, that parents looking to book through pediatrician might need to exercise patience given the patient volume. I'm not going to deny that. I think from the people I know, a lot of people want to get their kids vaccinated. I mean, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. And so I'm not surprised at all that there is this, there's going to be this high demand. But if I may, and once again, if you are anti-vaccine, or if you're even if you just say you're anti-vaccine, if you're one of these cowards that's been vaccinated but refuses to say because that's a private matter, at the same time as you scream, why aren't they allowing me to inject more horse dewormer up my backside? Privacy is a wonderful thing, isn't it? But the reality is as they are willing to share their, they're fetishist with horse dewormer from the veterinarian, they generally don't want to admit the fact that they're vaccinated because they're afraid that how it's going to, people might actually, think that I actually care. Let me just do me a favor, okay? If you're one of those people, if you're out there, you're bad-mouthing the vaccine, don't take your kids to go get vaccinated. First of all, there are a ton of families who 100% believe in vaccinations, who want their young children vaccinated, who are not out there openly trying to stop other people from getting vaccinated as they quietly say, shh, don't say that you saw me here with my kids. Just have the guts, have the decency, stay at home, and let the people who want to get the vaccination, who are going to applaud said vaccination, allow them to get the vaccination. Don't just sit there and act as if like, I'm entitled now. No, I'm tired of you people. To hear the horror stories yet once again from the nurses and doctors that basically are being tormented by you people as you insist that your political narrative overrides science and common sense, I'm tired of it. So just do us a favor. Don't just, because I know there's a lot of conservatives out there who are bad-mouthing the vaccine that don't want you to know that the second it was available for them or their family, they went and got it done. And those are the ones who are like, how dare you ask me about that? It's easy to figure out. Well, if there's one of those people that's refused to answer whether they're getting vaccinated or not, and you see them in line saying, no. Why don't you tell me, are vaccines good or bad? Because it implies to me that you're basically a massive hypocrite if you're out there screaming on social media and to everyone you see or on a political floor about how vaccines don't work, but then the second that the cameras are off, you're trying to smuggle your kids in the back door of a vaccination clinic to say, can you get my kids a shot? It's important. 952-946-6205. One final coronavirus story. The Wild are dealing with what appears to be breakthrough COVID-19 infections. Zuccarello and Pitlick are having some issues now. Russo of The Athletic reports that tested positive on Wednesday, will be tested again on Thursday per NHL guidelines. Though regardless of the result of Thursday's, they will not be playing Thursday night game tonight against the Kraken of Seattle. I got to figure Seattle Kraken into my horse to warmer story. The Kraken are here. Hello there. Who needs the horse to warmer? Zuccarello is Minnesota's leading scorer with 7 points through six games. His absence, meanwhile, will have to adapt just the top line, which featured Zuccarello, Eriksson-Ek, and Kaprizov. How long the players will be out will be determined by subsequent testing. I believe they actually had, and Patrick, you may know this better than I do. I thought some of the coaches had actually tested positive as well a few days ago. Am I right on that?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. It seems to have crossed over. I'm guaranteeing you right now that the team is taking this very seriously. And so my guess is that Zuccarello and Pitlick are basically very much, you know, away from the rest of the team, and the rest of the team is getting tested as well. But if you're wondering tonight, Zuccarello will not be playing against the Kraken, but that's the least of my concerns. Mr. Zuccarello, Mr. Pitlick, get healthy. And all the coaches, get healthy. That's your biggest priority. We're not too concerned about that. I'll tell you what, let's take this call really quick while I get the chance. Justin is in Coon Rapids, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Hey, Justin.
How's it going?
I'm going well, man. How are you
today? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, you're fine. So I was going to tell you this morning, because you were talking about how COVID vaccine deniers and stuff like that. I got a post on Facebook, and it's a meme, and it says, "Imagine lining up for the third time for something that didn't work the first or second." And it's a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio from Django. You know, the smiling, smug picture.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous, because this person was from Wyoming, the state of Wyoming, and they're having a terrible time out there.
And the thing which is crazy about these memes, Justin, and thanks, Justin, I appreciate the phone call, and my suggestion to Justin and everyone else, just delete them when you get them. The thing which is crazy about all those memes is that how stupid you actually intentionally have to be to even entertain that idea. I mean, it just is, and I mean, that's the guy, and I mean, I'm sorry. That's the guy that's dying in the ICU who's like, I don't want anyone to know I'm sick because I bad-mouthed it so bad. But you need to heal me now. No, it's... I keep waiting. You guys keep saying that hundreds of millions of people in the United States have been poisoned to the point of no return. At what point to the fact that all of us are still not dead, kind of, you say to yourself, oh, maybe I wasn't right about that. The reality is that these people will never acknowledge the fact that they've been wrong about every damn thing they've ever said. They will never admit it. The reality, that's why they move on to horse dewormer. Why aren't they giving me my horse dewormer? Master bad. They'll just run to something else. Because they are idiots. They know they're idiots. And they're just desperate for people to take them seriously. That's why I highly recommend just deleting them and not even giving them satisfaction of rebuttal, because you know what? They're looking for validity. Don't give it to them. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I get angry when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show, coming to you live right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The Matt McNeil Show. Thank you very much. A lot of nice comments coming up in the Facebook live streams. You can watch the radio show. I'm not there, though. You're not going to see me. You're just going to see an incredibly handsome picture of me on the live stream. Sorry. You're going to see that on the live stream. On Facebook, or is it, what's it, is it Meta now? Yeah, Meta. Also on Progressive Citizen Next Matt McNeil Show on the Meta Network. Needless to say, there you can go. You can watch it. Thank you very much for the very nice comments. It's nice to be doing the show again. It's going to be interesting how my hip holds out here for 2 hours sitting in a chair. I know this is a sacrifice I make, sitting in a chair for 2 hours, but trust me, this actually is going to be a bit of a challenge today. Gary is in Minneapolis. Let's get Gary's phone call on in here. Hey, Gary.
Yeah, Matt, I'm really fed up with these anti-vaxxers, too. They're protesting all over the country, everything. So here's a switch. They can dish it out, but they don't like it when it comes their way. One of the airlines, or several of the airlines, mandated, if you want to work here, you got to be vaccinated. And he said the reason why was the co-workers saying, heck with this crap. We're tired of working with these people spreading that stuff. So they get it right back at them.
Well, you know, Gary, thanks for the phone call. You know, the one thing that you have to kind of keep in mind about these anti-vaxxers is that for them, the only way that they will ever acknowledge that they were wrong is if they die. And that for some of them, that they will always say, I was right to not be a slave to wear a mask. I was right to not get jabbed by Fauci. That they will always believe that. And that's the sad part is, and they are going to be like, see, I was fine. And what they don't want to acknowledge is that there are a lot of people who aren't fine and a lot of people who died. I was thinking about this a little bit. If you go through, and I've talked about this, you go through every small town in this country, there is a memorial to the men and women, primarily the men, who served in World War I. That there's a World War I memorial in pretty much every town in this country. And the Great War, as they called it back then, before we had a second one, so we could start numbering them down the line. We always, and whenever I'm in those small towns, there's always an event, and it might be Memorial Day or Veterans Day or 4th of July, Armed Services Day, something of that nature. There's always an event where they're there where we honor those who've fallen. And my feeling is that we can never allow the people who have sat and denied this issue ever existed to ever have the ability to argue something differently. And because of how bad the coronavirus pandemic is, because it has truly been one of the, if not the worst thing that's ever happened in this country as far as death count goes, we have the ability to build in every single one of our towns and our cities a memorial to the medical personnel who went out there and bravely served during this crisis. The nurses and doctors who put in an insane amount of hours trying to save as many people as possible. And we should list all the unfortunate souls who died during coronavirus. Not as a way to rub it in anyone's face, so we just don't forget. Because I'm tired. If you're not paying attention to what's going on the other side of the aisle right now, they're trying to rewrite all history. Nothing, they don't filter through an extreme conservative sieve ever did happen. It's all conservatives, and that's the deal. And so they want to say, trust me, we are right there with being some kind of kangaroo country that basically just makes up stuff as they go. And there are Republicans out there today who still think only 50 or so people have died, that no one has really died. And if you actually created these memorials and said these are a thank you to the medical personnel of every one of these towns who helped save these people and listed everyone in these towns, not only would you have memorials which were bigger than any losses we had on either World War I or World War II or the Civil War, for goodness sakes. I mean, it's been an atrocious body count in this coronavirus fight. If you actually went out there and you had the memorial out there, it would become far more difficult for them to basically say that never did happen. But you see, these people, they're so illogical, they're so irrational. It's unbelievable. It really is truly unbelievable. And it brings me to we've got a fight on our hands. And I've become, once again, sometimes when I get able to step away from the news cycle for a few days and I come back at it, it becomes very disappointing to see exactly where we're at. Not necessarily because of the Republicans, because the Republicans are who they are. They are who they are. The reality is that it's the Democrats, in my mind, who are failing. And a great example is, let's look at two great examples that have happened over the last few days on the national level. First of all, in regards to the Biden agenda, this bill that they want to get passed, which has been torpedoed by one of their own, Joe Manchin. Well, probably by Kyrsten Sinema, too, but by Joe Manchin. And he's torpedoed this bill. He's basically, as a Democrat, says, I'm not on board with this. And the first thing I posted this a bunch of times, and I posted it again this morning. I said to myself that one thing about Republicans is this, is that when it comes to major bills and initiatives, every Republican votes for that bill. There is no deviation, that every single one of them is on board with the basics of what the party stands for, even if it's lunatic fringe, far right extremism. I mean, take a look at the Trump tax bill. I mean, every economist was saying the exact thing that was going to happen. This is going to torpedo the economy. And it did. But every one of them, with a smile on their face, went and voted for it. Didn't even hesitate. The reality is that the failure in regards to this issue has nothing to do with the Republicans and the fact that, oh, there's that one-seat majority, Matt. It's so hard when they have that one-seat majority. It's so difficult to be able to, you know, get stuff passed. Yeah, it is. But you can get stuff passed if every Democrat was on board with the Democratic agenda. And you see, there's your problem. Your problem is somehow someone let Joe Manchin into the party. If, you know, there should be some basics to be a Democrat. Oh, that you're for family leave, you're for, you know, free community colleges, you're for your affordable health care. These should be issues which you shouldn't even bat a freaking eye at. That's called your platform. That is called being a Democrat. And way too many times Democrats are like, oh, he doesn't want to be part of the Republican Party anymore. Let's make him a Democrat. And that's the extent of it. Right now, and I like Ken Martin, I like the DFL, but right now, I guarantee you, in some rural district, which is very conservative, some guy has basically called them and saying, hey, I'm a Republican, but there's no chance I'm going to win the primary, so I'll run as a Democrat. And that's the extent of the conversation. They're like, great, here's the endorsement, good luck. There is no question, there is no doubt, there's no, you know, is this person a good fit for the party? Is this person, do you agree with this? When it comes time to vote for this, are you going to vote along with us? They don't do that. So Joe Manchin is not anything new. It's just now he can really hurt us because he's not a Democrat, for God's sakes. He's just not. And you guys putting a D next to his name and then acting like, we're the big boys, we've got the majority. It doesn't matter if half your, three quarters of your main platform is destroyed by one guy. He's not a Democrat. And you know what? I know that people out there are like, I don't want to do this, Matt. No. Boot him. Yep, you just lost the majority of the Senate. Don't care. You got a much better chance, in my mind, in this next election cycle and in 2024, if you get rid of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and say, you know what? You guys aren't Democrats. You guys can go be independents. If you want to go become Republicans, knock yourself out. Or the Republican Party will not have them be the Republicans. I can guarantee you that, especially not in West Virginia. But good luck with all that and boot them out the door. Say, sorry, if you're not part of the platform, then you're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution. But you see, if people don't have the guts to look at the Democratic Party and say, you screwed this up. You cannot have a wide umbrella party that features Bernie Sanders and Colin Peterson under the same freaking umbrella. You are way too expanded now. And there is no way on the planet those people are going to agree. I mean, this is not, like I said, it's not Joe Manchin's fault. Joe Manchin. It's the Democrats' fault for bringing him into the Democratic Party and thinking that he was going to vote along the same lines as Bernie Sanders. Of course he's not. But you guys don't have any damn standards. The other day, when Merrick Garland was up on Capitol Hill, Republicans were going after him because the FBI is looking into these parents who are calling up school boards, and they're out there, they're saying, you know, I know where you live. I'm going to kill you and all your kids. And these are the threats these people are getting, which I think, well, at least before this week, I was of the mindset, you know what? That's probably not acceptable. It's not acceptable to sit there and threaten family people and their family members. But here come the Republican Party to basically argue, well, sure, there might be some people making threats, but all you're doing is trying to stifle free speech. You do not have freedom of speech to threaten others. That is something that's long established law in this country. You cannot scream fire in a movie theater. You cannot go on out there and start screaming how you're going to murder someone's kids unless they do what you want them to do and think there are no consequences. If I was to do that and go on out, guess what? I'm going to get arrested. But I kept waiting all day long for a single freaking Democrat to come on out and say, well, no, this is about death threats. Are you guys pro-death threat now? Because that's the end of the discussion right there. And yet, nope, not one single damn Democrat came on out and sat there and defended the fact that we've got to protect school board members, both Republicans and Democrats, mind you, from being threatened with murder of themselves and their entire family at the hands of lunatic fringe howler monkeys that show up at their school board meetings. And this is not about freedom of speech. This is about, it's only about protecting the innocent civilians who are only trying to do a job. And yet every Republican was allowed to go on out there and present this as, you know, you're trying to stop freedom of speech. And God, you know, just, it's almost like the Democrats are like, oh, yeah, he is. No, is it going to take a dead school board member? And you want to know the truth is, God forbid that actually does happen. A school board member does get shot. Are the Democrats then going to actually retaliate? No, they're going to sit there and say, gee, Willikers, you probably should have done what we wanted to, but let's move on to something else. Democrats, you guys are screwing this up on your own. You don't need the Republicans. You basically, you're taking the easy layup and you've convinced yourself it's going to be an easier shot to take the full court shot, one-handed, blindfolded, turned around. And you basically are in saying, see, this is going to be easy. You guys are screwing this up, and it's as much as I'd like to sit there and scream at the Republicans, it's the Democrats. You got to create a party standard that if you want to be a Democrat, you have to be for these things, whether that's on the national level or on the local level. But you absolutely have to get on out there, and you got to fight, especially when these lies get put out there. There's a reason why when patients are going to hospitals in Minneapolis now, a year and a half after this coronavirus pandemic started, there's a reason why these people are coming in, and the first thing that's happening is they have to get educated into what actually has been going on. And you sit there and you keep saying to yourself, well, it's, you know, that's not our fault. Is it? Or have you guys just failed? You completely stopped at trying to get message passed out in rural Minnesota? Because that's what it kind of sounds like to me. Sounds like you're not even trying to get your any kind of message out there delivered. And you're failing, and you're failing horrifically right now. It's, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, I know the consequences when I say this. The Democratic Party should boot Manchin, they should boot Sinema, because then at least you have some frickin' integrity. And if nothing's going to get passed now because of those two clowns, at least you can use that and say, hey, give us real Democrats and we'll get this done. 952-946-6205. Lynette, hold on. I'll get your call after the break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Matt McNeil Show. Lynette is in Chaska. Lynette, thanks for holding. Welcome on to the show.
Hi, Matt. Hey, I hope you're going to get well soon.
I should be able to. The prognosis looks pretty good.
That's good. I know every time I go for something medical, yes, I always thank the people for doing a good job, and they say, oh, if you only knew. So I totally agree with you, and, you know, when this subject comes up, I am really disappointed in the Democrats. Why do they even mess around with Sinema and Manchin? Oh, my God, it is. And of course, look what they did to Al Franken, who was totally a fighter, totally a Democrat, totally. Whenever he interviewed someone, it was spot on. It was like, oh, my God, he knew how to get to the core of something. And I think even the Democrats must have been afraid of him. I don't know. But that was just crazy. I just always think of what they did to him at times like this. Because, yeah, I totally agree. Manchin and Sinema are not Democrats. They're just really convenient little chess pieces for the Republicans to manipulate.
Well, and Lynette, thank you very much. I mean, I think to a point, I appreciate the phone call. I think to a point, Franken's getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I always look at Colin Peterson. I mean, what did Colin Peterson give to the Democrats outside of the ability to say Minnesota 7 was a Democratic held district. What did he give him? Nothing. I mean, there were times, I mean, didn't he not even vote to impeach Trump once? I believe he voted not to impeach Trump. And, you know, I think there comes a point where you have to ask yourself the question, if the person is that fringe, if they are that much of an extreme off to the far right, in the same sense as this, is to a point, I don't know if you should be necessarily getting into the realm of the Democratic Socialists if you're a Democrat, because that's a completely different party. I'm not saying I don't agree with a lot of things that Bernie Sanders does and all this stuff, but that's the Democratic Socialists for a long time were their own political party. And here you now have a political party that's trying to be everything for everyone, and it doesn't work that way. You cannot have a robust party which is on one side of it promising everything that Bernie Sanders wants and on the other side promising everything that guy like Joe Manchin wants. You just can't have that. I mean, it's impossible to – you've just created too wide of a fringe. And it's almost to the point where I don't think the Democrats have the guts to fix themselves, if you want to know the truth. I ain't going to be honest with you. I think that what's going to take is them losing a large portion of the party, whether that's a new moderate party and a lot of Democrats go and jump on board with that, or the Social Democrats get themselves organized and create their own separate party and a lot of the people on the far left go and join that. And then they're going to be sitting there saying, what happened to half our party? Well, you basically try to be everything for everyone, and as opposed to trying to be something for everyone, and you know that's not how it works. It just is not how it works. So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to see because right now every mistake that's happening to Joe Biden and his agenda is being self-induced by wish-washy Democrats yet once again. Hour two of the show is up again and coming up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. No, I will not have since I'm broadcasting live right now, I am at my house, in my basement, as my children do all the chores outside. Yes, it's a tough life here. Recovering from hip replacement surgery, I am broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota official basement in my house. We've actually put up signs and everything. It's good to be back. I'm not going to have, though, what happened to the amazingly adorable story of the baby that came up and attacked Representative Carly Coitza with Dune. In the video clip, if you've not seen it, it's very, very cute. You know, Patrick, I do have a dog here. If you have to let me know, Patrick, if you hear her barking, she starts to bark. Okay.
All right. Well, she'd fit right in because they get animals hanging out on Native Roots Radio, so
they
no big
do.
Deal.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually had. I've been at this radio station for a while. And it's been amazing to me how many times I've walked into a radio studio and there's an animal in the studio. And sometimes it's intentional, like dogs. We've had a lot of dogs over the years in the studios. It's nice. We stopped that. We actually had to put a policy in when someone's dog came in and basically had some issues, digestive issues. I'll just leave it at that. Sometimes we have snakes because we live right on that marsh. Or we're right on Bryant Lake, and so there's a huge marsh behind us. So occasionally we get some snakes in there, which that is just such a so much fun to do a live show, and all of a sudden I'm Indiana Jonesing in the Temple of Doom here, away from the snakes. You don't ever hear me scream out. Are there any snakes in there today?
I did not see any, but then again, it's been cold and no sunshine, so they're probably just kind of, not hibernating, but whatever cold-blooded reptiles do when there's no sunshine.
Yeah, they go to Mazatlan. Well, no, they're hibernating. That's hibernating. They're going down there. They're taking. Trust me. I mean, that's a deep sleep. They're getting down. They're going to be out for a while. It is. You bring up the cold weather. Halloween. Are you going to dress up for Halloween this year?
Well, I will be dressing up as a Vikings fan since they're playing that night. That's my costume.
Are you going to be going to the game?
Actually, it was funny. I was just talking to Brett about that. I've thought about it. I haven't decided. Maybe I'll decide later this week.
Well, I mean, how hard is it? I mean, are you able to get tickets?
Oh, I can get tickets. It's a matter of do I want to pay for the ticket.
Well, yeah, that's the case. Well, I would always be a little concerned about that for the guys being is that it's you leave your house unattended on the Halloween night. That's just you're going to put that bowl out there. That's going to it's going to be empty after like the third group of trick or treaters, if not the first group of trick or treaters coming through. So where's your house at so we can come egg your house?
Let me just I'll give you the address and then I'm going to hit the dumb button.
All right. I'm not going to be able to go on out. It was funny because I had a friend saying, ask me, it's like, you didn't know I was having the hip replacement surgery. You go, I want to go to the Stones. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to be going now. I'm not going to be going on out. I do have the candy ready to go for the kids and they're for the little kids. And I think I said this last week, I've done this every year for the little kids. I have the big candy bars, like regular size jumbo Cadbury bars. Because there is nothing better than after you've gotten a ton of mini candy bars, getting one big honking candy bar in there, that's gold. And so I've got that all ready to go. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be interesting to see if there's going to be a big crowd because it's Sunday night. You do have the Vikes game, as you brought up. First of all, we'll say it. Be careful if you're driving around any time between, say, 4 in the afternoon and 10 o'clock at night. There's a lot of kids out there, a lot of kids darting between cars and stuff. Be careful. Drive slow. But usually they have a pretty high drinking and driving night. But with it being on a Sunday, I don't know if it's going to be that bad. I mean, the Vikings, they always usually have a little bit of that with any big sporting event. They're going to have some of that. But I don't know. Are they expecting a lot of people to be out drinking and driving on the Halloween with it Sunday? Usually it's not that bad. Not as bad as Friday or Saturday, for sure.
Usually what they do is they have the Halloween parties on the Saturday right before Halloween, so I would expect most of that will be Saturday night, the 30th.
Yeah, if you're right, if you're like someone like Park Tavern or something like that, do you go on out there and have the party with the Vikings game? No, you want that Halloween party done on that Saturday night for that exact reason. That's actually a very good point. You don't want to have to compete with Vikings in one bar and some guy dressed up as Ted Lasso and a bunch of Ted Lassos coming in on the other side. So,
well, I think they would do that.
No matter what.
I think they would do that even if the Vikings weren't playing Sunday night. It's just some societal thing that they do all the Halloween stuff on the nearest Saturday beforehand.
I lived in a town that would do the trick-or-treating on the Saturday beforehand. Did not like that. Did not like it because it just was like, I get you want to be safe and all that stuff, but, whether it's trick-or-treating on the 28th of October or trick-or-treating on the 3rd of November, it's not a lot of fun. I mean, Halloween is the night everyone's out, so... I'm just do it on Halloween, get it done with. By the way, it's medication time, if I can make this. This is something that I probably shouldn't be taking. Here we go. Mellow. Oh, ready for my smooth jazz and some Doritos. Patrick, just in case, you might want to be standing on by. This hour could be a little sketchy as the pain medication kicks on in. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, I always do enjoy when I have another story of the police. Whenever we hear about bad police behavior, they're always the first to scream, "Well, that's just one bad apple." And I'd be the first to say the vast majority of police officers are absolutely brilliant people. But the idea, the notion of screaming, "It's just one bad apple," not only completely and totally misrepresents the problem most of the time, but it also, it's a way to dismiss not doing anything to solve the problem when horrific police work gets exposed. And we have, Carol Levin actually has a story out here, and this story is disturbing to say the least. And once again, get it. A few bad apples, and I guarantee they probably think that they did nothing wrong here, but you read this story, it is god-awful. January 7, 2020 began like any other evening in Dayton, Minnesota home. Faris Hussein sat at his living room playing video games on his laptop. His wife, Sarah, 9 months pregnant with their first child, cooked in the kitchen. Due in only 2 weeks, they dreamt of how they would welcome their son into the world. Her husband would be by her side to comfort her with the family close by, ready to bring him back to a home filled with everything that their baby could possibly need. We were excited to be a family, Farah said. When they heard what sounded like a boom at their front door, the night ended with 26-year-old Sarah alone in the Hennepin County Jail, booked for a crime she did not commit, weeping in searing pain and in labor. Her 26-year-old husband sat behind bars in another part of the jail, arrested after he says he defended his wife and unborn child against what he thought were home invaders. Instead, they turned out to be police raiding his home because they wrongly suspected he was working with a small-time shoplifter. All right. Already, the big first thing I can say is if you're thinking he's working with a small-time shoplifter, what's with the blasting in of the front door like you're taking down the cartel? You know, it seems like already from this story, you read this story and you're like, it doesn't seem like your response was really indicative of the crime. After Sarah said she spent the next day and a half begging jail guards for help, her water broke. Then records interviews showed she was taken to a hospital, shackled to the ambulance gurney, and then to a hospital bed. The American Medical Association calls restraining pregnant women during a birthing process barbaric. It's something you only do see in really the worst countries, isn't it? It really is something you only see in the absolute worst countries. And in Minnesota. An expert who reviewed the case said that it's clear violation of state law. In 2014, the Minnesota legislature made it illegal for jails or prisons to restrain pregnant women unless they were safety or security risks. Based on the... Oh, and I guarantee you the police are getting ready to lie their ass off about how she was a safety and security risk at 9 months pregnant to justify their actions. No, seriously. There are evil dictators that run dark op operations right now on this planet that would not put a pregnant woman in shackles. I just want to make sure we understand this. We're not talking just some bad police procedure. This decision is one of the worst things a human being could ever do to another human being. And there are a lot of people that we look down upon as a country who would never stoop to the level that a police department in this country did. Yep. Based on the facts of the case, I have nothing suggests that it was legal to restrain this woman the way she was, said Rebecca Schlafer, a University Department of Health, Minnesota Department of Health pediatrician assistant professor, who was part of the team that advocated for the ban. This is a very clear case which the law has been violated, Schlafer said after reviewing the case for Care 11. In the hospital, humiliated, exhausted, Sarah said she spent 5 hours in labor before finally being freed from the shackles. She said she begged for her husband to be there, still not knowing why the police raided their home in the first place or even why she was in jail. Now, mind you, she was arrested. She was put on a gurney, strapped to a gurney at the police station. Then she was strapped to a gurney in the ambulance. Then she was strapped to the gurney in the hospital. She'd been there for hours, if not days, and they still had not charged her what anyone had been charged with. Wow. That also is relatively disturbing. When Ferris called his brother from jail and found out his wife was in labor, he could only sob in the cell, knowing he could do nothing to be with her. Even after she gave birth, another 2 days passed before Ferris could post bail and finally be with his family. They took away my happiness that day, Sarah said. I will never forgive them, Ferris added. And it's all happened over a snowblower. That these people, once again, these people treated these other people thinking they had a stolen snowblower. They got rid of all human rights conditions and violated the crap out of these people's human rights just because they could. You are all horrible human beings. You seriously suck at being a human being. You are the anti-Christian. You are anti-everything. You are horrible. And once again, not all cops are bad, but do not sit there and say this is one or two bad apples, because this was institutional failure within this police department, and this was top to bottom. Everyone involved was a freaking nightmare. Before January 7th, fiber engineer while studying to get his master's, as Sarah studied at North Hennepin Community College. Other than a few speeding and parking tickets, neither had a criminal record. The same cannot be said of Kevin LeClaire, whose criminal record is filled with a host of theft charges and convictions, many of them for shoplifting throughout Minnesota. In late 2019, Menard suspected LeClaire of stealing merchandise from stores, then returning them later for a service desk to exchange for gift cards, according to company and police records. LeClaire now faces several charges for the alleged thefts, many of those cases still pending. Ferris said he bought those gift cards on an online marketplace where LeClaire had positive reviews and sold the cards at discount. Ferris said he had no idea the seller's criminal history or how LeClaire was suspected of getting the cards. There is nothing suspicious about him, Ferris said. He drives a $60,000 truck and looks professional. LeClaire was not available to be reached for comment. Needing a snowblower, Ferris used the gift cards to buy one of the Maple Grove Menards, a $859 12 and 12 cent Briggs & Stratton model. Menards traced the purchase back to Ferris. Maple Grove detective James Kirkey, who had been investigating the case, got a warrant to search Ferris's home for the snowblower, but as Kirkey would later tell an investigator, the search was going to be more than just a knock and talk. About 2 years earlier, a contractor had called Dayton police saying he was at Ferris's home where he saw numerous guns and ammunition in the bedroom. The contractor said when he learned that the two Arab brothers owned the home, he became very suspicious due to the recent events, according to the police report. So I want to make sure we understand this. This contractor, who I want to find out the name of the contractor that called the Dayton police. I want to find out that slimeball's name. Because he saw, Arab guys with guns. Dude, you would have never said anything if it was a bunch of white guys with an armory of weapons in the house. You would have never said a damn thing about it. But two Arab guys legally having firearms, and you basically, it's like, it's a terrorist cell! It's a terrorist cell! Dear God, I want to find out the name of the contractor. That guy needs to be shamed. His ass needs to be shamed out of the state as well. Ferris said that state and local authorities raided his home in 2019, seized his firearms, but they were returned. Records show he was never charged. He had legally owned all of them and kept them for hunting and self-defense, police records show. So, once again, where's the NRA on this grand injustice? Oh, that's right. The gun owner wasn't white. A confidential police planning memo for the snowblower raid shows officers knew about the earlier gun raid. He also said there was no reports of violent acts, according to the residents, and neither parody was a violent criminal history. All right. So, once again, nothing here that really kind of made you think in any sense that there was anything really dangerous going on here. Still knowing there were guns in the house, Kirkey brought five other officers with him for the snowblower raid. When their cars parked in the street out of view, two cops went to the backyard, another stood at the front row with a rifle, three stood at the home's front entryway. They pounded on the door. "Police search warrant, open the door, please," one of the officers announced, according to the police recording of the raid. At the time of the 9 seconds, officers hauled twice more for the door to be open after 9 seconds. 27 seconds after the first knock, they made good on the threat, started kicking in the door, which, once again, seems a smidge heavy-handed. Playing video games with his headphones on, Ferris says he didn't hear the officers and announced they were police. At first, he thought they were pounding on the door might be just his brother pranking him. But as they pounded, continued, quickly realized it was something else. He grabbed the gun he kept next to him in the drawer, went to the window, peeked through the blinds. He said he only saw large men in a trench coat and no police cars. Once again, police basically not really announcing who they are. He thought someone was trying to break in or maybe targeting his family for a hate crime. The last thing he expected were police. Opened the door before he booted, he heard whoever it was told him he wasn't going to let them in. He yelled for Sarah to call 911. So he clearly does not think these people are the police. As he watched the door being kicked in, he said he fired a warning shot pointed down through the window and another warning shot at the ground, and the door burst open. I wanted to show them I was serious. I was willing to defend myself. Ferris said he went to open the door to see who was trying to break in. One of the officers later said when he saw the arm with the gun poking out the door, he fired a bullet which would land in a neighbor's home. Ferris said he could feel the bullet fly by his face. I thought this was where I was going to die today. Ferris fired a third shot, also to the ground, he says, then retreated into his home with his terrified wife on with 911. Ferris yelled for the police to hurry up. "We have the police there," the operator told him. Ferris didn't understand what the operator meant. How could that possibly be? Ferris came out of the house with your hands up. Officer yelled at him, "This is a stupid search warrant for a snowblower." Well, if it's a search warrant for the snowblower, why are you kicking in the door? I'll tell you what, I got to take a break. Come on back. Sven Sundgaard going to join us as well, talking weather here towards the bottom of the hour. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. More on this god-awful story when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So get back to this story here. Ferris is on with 911 trying to basically confirm these are police officers. They are real officers, the 911 dispatcher responded. Get out of the house with your hands up. He did. He dropped his gun and walked out the house, never resisting arrest. Sarah followed with Ferris, tried to tell police she was pregnant. In a lawsuit, Sarah accused a Maple Grove officer of slamming her to the ground, onto her stomach, and sending her into labor. I was in so much pain, she said in the interview with Care 11. Dude, you know, it's clear that these people are not paying attention. Your health and well-being do not matter to them. I mean, let's just be honest. And if they would have shot you, they would have argued it was a justifiable kill any day. Police took Sarah to Hennepin County Jail that night. Records show investigators held her on a 36-hour possible cause hold. The charge, first-degree assault. Now, this is once again Sarah, who hadn't done anything outside of call 911, even though there's no evidence she did anything else. On a booking form, the officer even checked yes when he asked, did the arrestee cooperate during the arrest process? Sarah said that when she asked home, they all told it was for a stolen snowblower. I don't know what they're talking about, she said. Shaking from labor pain by the next morning, she had asked to see a doctor. Instead, she was told a nurse came and told her it was just stress, giving her nothing for the pain. I want to know who that nurse was who clearly did not come in there and check to see the woman was in labor, for goodness sakes. Sarah said her back pain became so severe that she dragged a mattress to lay it on top of one she was using before being told she had to put it back. She slept only an hour that night, waking up at 5 a.m. when her water broke. She went to her cell door and told them what had happened. She said she was ordered to show proof. She had to show them the spoiled pad. It was humiliating. Finally, an ambulance arrived to take Sarah to the nearby Hennepin County Medical Center, only blocks away. In pain, already in labor, she was shackled as two jail guards accompanied her to the hospital. In 2010, the American Medical Association condemned shackling pregnant prisoners and called restraining them during the birthing process barbaric and a risk to mother and baby. And trust me, right now, there are a lot of terrorist organizations on this planet who would never do that to a pregnant woman. But in Maple Grove, they sure do. Seriously, I'm dead serious. There are a lot of horrible human beings on the planet would never say, oh, but we're not going to shackle pregnant women. Maple Grove Police, congratulations, you're worse than them. In 2014, the Minnesota legislature voted unanimously to ban the use of any type of restraint against a woman like Sarah who are in labor, allowing it only for an extraordinary medical or security circumstance. In all, 192 members of the House and Senate voted to approve the shackling ban. None voted against it. My God, I mean, seriously. How bad is the shackling of a pregnant woman that every politician in the state was against it? There's no rationale I could see at this point that would make it legal for them to shackle her. Jail records indicate there was no violence involving Sarah before she was transferred to the hospital. The records say she was cooperative with staff throughout the entire process. Later, after Sarah complained to Hennepin Healthcare about being shackled, a patient representative from put the blame on Sarah's jailers, according to the report provided to Care 11. You were in custody with law enforcement and arrived in shackles. This was not a decision made by our staff. Leadership explained the shackles were removed by law enforcement and you delivered your child without shackles or restraint in place, the patient representative for the hospital wrote. The Hennepin Healthcare spokeswoman told Care 11 that the hospital's policy for removing restraints in in-custody patients remains with law enforcement. Our policy allows us to request that they relax them for medical reasons. At one point, Sarah said she asked to go to the bathroom. She says the deputies released her from the bed but shackled both of her legs together before allowing her to go. When she got back, they again shackled her leg to the bed. I was treated like a dog. It was only after a 36-hour legal hold expired that the deputies removed her shackles and left. She was never charged with a crime. So they literally could not figure out what to charge her with after treating her worse than anything I've heard in a long time. They just say, no blood, no foul, huh? Hey, good luck with the baby. What a, you guys are horrible human beings in this police department. Seriously, you guys are all atrocious human beings. After another 8.5 hours, she gave birth to a son. She said it was exhausted and traumatized. I can understand why. The loving home they had hoped to bring the baby had been ransacked by the police, forcing them to live in a hotel. She had to fight to stay in the country. There was another issue there. Sarah also filed a lawsuit against Hennepin County saying she was denied medical care, though the jail was constitutional rights violated as she shackled her while she was pregnant. Suit also names of Maple Grove police officer Sarah had pushed her to the ground in the night of the arrest, accusing her of excessive force. Arresting my client, holding him while she's pregnant, while she did nothing wrong here, and treating the way she did was completely unjustifiable, said Nick Sweeney. But you see, so Maple Grove Police Department, Hennepin County, you're going to have to pay a ton of taxpayer dollars. Most of those cops probably don't even live in Hennepin County or Maple Grove for that matter. And so it's never going to affect them. So there's no consequences for their bad behavior. They basically, what are they going to get, a stern finger warning? Make sure that there's no cameras recording you shackling the next pregnant woman? Dear Lord. I hope they sue them. I hope they, frankly, I'm shocked. How in the world is the state attorney general's office not filing charges against these police officers for violating basic human rights? I mean, I'm flabbergasted that that is, I mean, these guys are truly horrible human beings. And I want to repeat something, and I'll stand by this. There are evil, horrible human dictators on this planet who run black ops organizations, who do horrible things that don't stoop to the level of shackling pregnant women to jail cells and to gurneys. They don't. And so you sitting there and saying, oh, this is just police procedure. No, this is Nazi-like Germany procedure. This is the worst of we've ever seen procedure. And you're all horrible human beings for doing so. Like I said, I'd like to also get the name of that nurse that basically didn't think anything was wrong with her. She's giving birth. Also, the contractor that basically said, he's an Arab with a gun, terrorist! I'm paraphrasing, but you kind of get the point. Dear Lord, once again, most cops are good people. But if you were to sit there and say, well, that's just one or two bad apples. No, it's not. There is systemic problems in these police departments where there is not just one or two bad apples. There is a good portion, a good percentage of the police force in many of these police departments who are truly horrible human beings that should never have gotten a badge or a gun. And until you guys deal with this stuff, don't look at us and say, you're giving us a bad look. No, we didn't shackle the pregnant woman to a gurney. You did. The completely innocent woman who had done nothing wrong. That is third world dictator crap, but even third world dictators have better standards than the Maple Grove Police Department. Dear Lord. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. We're going to, you know, get off this subject. Sven Sungar, we'll get into the weather with him when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Patrick, are we good with Sven? We have him there? I'm going to presume that's a yes, because that's always, you know, empty silence is always the case. Sven Sundgaard, of course, is the weatherman extraordinaire for bringmethenews.com. Forecastissold.com as well. Forecastissold.com. You can get his weather forecast there. Sven, are you there?
I'm hearing music.
Are you hearing music? Is it good music?
I can barely hear you.
You can barely hear me.
Yeah, now Patrick, I hear you.
There you go. All right.
There was Patrick, some music over you.
Well, Patrick's adjusting buttons. Well, so I had my hip replacement surgery last Friday. So
yeah, I didn't know you were that old.
Thanks. No, thank you. I'm 53, damn it. And well, my new hip's going to outlast all of us.
And I know people younger than both of us who've had hip replacements. So yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, I am not in the studio like I usually am. I am in my basement, in the Palatial Broadcasting, McNeil Broadcasting Complex, the Metroplex of Hopkins. And so we're doing this here.
It's like Paisley Park, isn't it?
Well, it's like Paisley Park without all the good style music or you know, reasons for people to visit. But outside of that, it's great.
I have a funny story about Paisley Park to tell you one day.
Okay.
If you want to hear now.
Sure, why not? Why not?
I was an intern, a paid intern at the Twin Cities National Weather Service office when I was a senior in college, which is a big deal. They're very competitive, very rare to get it. And so I would, you know, commute from, you know, growing up in Cottage Grove, I was home for the summer, all the way out to Chanhassen to the weather service office every day, passed it all the time, had no idea what it was. And one day he had some concert or some like giant event open to the public or semi-public, and so there are cars parked out everywhere, you know, and in a suburb like Chanhassen, that's noticeable, like what's going on. So I get to the weather service office and I ask one of the forecasters, I said, what is going on in that big pink complex out there? They're like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, that's Paisley Park, that's Prince's palace. And I'm like, what? I said, I pass this every day. I had no clue. But, you know, I was a young 21-year-old.
I always loved the stories and the ones you'd hear after when him tragically passed away, that he'd just jump on his bike from there and bike into downtown Chanhassen, where like the Chanhassen Dinner Theater is and the Target and stuff, and he'd just go do shopping in the midday and kind of bike back to his house. And I just I don't know if I'd be able to wrap my mind as like, is that Prince on a bike going to a caribou? That
doesn't seem right. Well, yeah, and everybody said probably a lot like me that he was so much shorter than you realize when you saw him in person. Mm-hmm. He was even shorter than me, and you know, it's just, you know, it's our, the way we view people sometimes, where, you know, when we see them in person, it's just different. But I was always hoping, you know, he would randomly like send cryptic messages to people that he'd never met, you know, like I'd heard even newscasters like, yeah. Hey, there's, you know, this impromptu concert at Paisley Park, be there, knock 3.5 times at the side door, be there, you know, at 1 a.m. And I was always hoping I'd get some invite, but I never did.
I actually did go to his place once as a kid. It was an industry party, and apparently one of my friend's dads worked, was a lawyer and worked for someone, so he was invited out there. It's an interesting place, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd never been there. I'd like to go tour it. Mm-hmm. You know, now that it's open to the public and stuff. But yeah, we're sidetracked completely.
I'll tell you what. We got a lot of weather to get to, because you had been saying eventually we are going to come back. And now, yeah, I'd say right now it definitely feels like late October in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah, finally, right? It's finally fall. We just hadn't had any of this, and it's a little bit of a shock to the system. We've actually now in the last 10 days had several below normal days, which is something that we just didn't see. We had, you know, 3 consecutive weeks of every single day being above normal, which even in a warm year like this is something. And yeah, it's just like, it literally was just like summer was hanging on. And then all of a sudden Mother Nature's like, oh wait, it's fall. Boom. So here we go. But, you know, and what we've seen is nothing crazy. You know, October can really bring some wild swings in temperatures, even in a normal year, even, you know, separate last October, which was crazy cold. But we usually get some of our first real nasty cold in October, especially the second half sometimes. And I'm talking about, you know, that first morning in the teens or 20s. And some places were briefly in the upper 20s last weekend for one or two mornings. But we just really haven't seen, you know, and the below normal temperatures I'm talking about, like we had last weekend, was really not that far below. You know, you've got to keep in mind the normal high right now is about 51 degrees. And we've, even most of this week, today, even with it raining and cloudy, we were still above normal.
The hard part for me, and as this whole process has been going on where the climate is definitely changing, the hardest part for me is that, you know, okay, great, it's nice later, okay? But it will go 70, 70, 70, then one day at 55, and then we don't break 30 again. I mean, that adjustment is very hard, because it does seem like we get a lot of that swing back, and that's kind of what we had. We had these 70 degrees. You and I were talking about how many 70-degree days we'd had in October, and now it seems like that, you know, it just like all of a sudden 3 days, one big rainstorm, boom, we're done with that, and we're not going to probably get above 60 again. You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not the forecaster. You are, but it does feel as if we're kind of now stuck in this cold, much colder level now than we were at before.
Yeah, I wouldn't count out 60. That can happen, even in mid to late November sometimes, especially, you know, I mean, there's enough warmth in the Northern Hemisphere where that's definitely possible. It's a matter of, is our pattern finally changing a little bit to a more realistic pattern, you know, and at some point we're at that time of year where the pattern does typically finally shift from a summer pattern into the winter pattern. And, you know, yeah, usually, you can make both arguments. Gradually changing into seasons, to your point, is maybe a little better, because then it isn't such a shock. But then, you know, you can also make the argument having extended summer isn't so bad either. But, yeah, it is definitely a shock. But there are some indications that maybe we're turning the corner a little bit on the pattern into a more normal, like, November. I'm actually going to be finishing up this weekend my forecast for the month of November, so stay tuned for that. And I don't think it's going to be so ridiculously mild compared to normal, like September and October. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be in the 70s and 60s a bunch. But, you know, we're talking about relative to the normals. I think it's going to be a more realistic, more normal like November, but still looking at a few things.
One of the things I've been following your weather forecast, which, by the way, still as I am laid up here, I've actually very much enjoyed being able to keep up with the weather with your weather forecast. YouTube has them. Bring Me the News has them. They're great. I post them whenever he puts them out. You talked about this rain that was coming through. We were looking at a fairly substantial rain event. It looked like it was shifting a little bit. The heavier rains were going to stay more to the west. Is that what indeed did happen? Did the heavier rain stay west of us?
Yep. I mean, and boy, did they get it too. You know, places like New Ulm, I'm trying to think of some of the areas, starts with a D. Who was it who sent it to me? Anyway, that, you know, west central Minnesota, basically New Ulm, Mankato, down to Albert Lea, and then up to almost St. Cloud. That area, there's a pocket there that got 2 inches of rain.
Wow.
And we're not talking about, you know, that's more remarkable this time of year to get that kind of rain, because a thunderstorm we know can do that. But these kind of, there was no lightning or thunder in any of this. This was just, you know, I think people, again, it's not a new term, kind of like when we heard polar vortex 7-8 years ago, everyone thought, wait, where'd that come from? You probably heard atmospheric river, because that was a contributing factor in the Pacific Northwest storm over the weekend, which brought them a ton of rain. And all that is essentially, you know, you and I have talked about precipitable water, that water content in the atmosphere. Sometimes you can get on the coasts, especially these plumes of moisture. You get, think of a big chunk of cold air coming out of Siberia or the Arctic. It moves across the Pacific Ocean and it can really plow up out ahead of it a plume of tropical moisture that, if it's aiming right like it did at the West Coast last weekend, you're talking several inches of rain. They had San Francisco had its fourth wettest day ever on Sunday. And their records go back to the 1850s because of the gold rush. They've got longer records than we do, reliable records. And then that same storm is what literally we're seeing the remnants of. Now, when it goes over the Rockies, it loses that tropical moisture, but then it tapped into Gulf moisture. We basically, this was another narrower atmospheric river from the Gulf of Mexico. And the reason that we didn't get the heaviest amounts is Minnesota is really at the northern end of that. You can think of it, it looks like a hose of moisture. And that's just kind of where it fizzled out when the because the center of the system was way to the south, moving across Arkansas and through the southeast. So once that center of the system moved too far east, basically the hose kind of just dissipates over us. And so that's why if you looked at radar imagery at all today, you just kind of saw showers just disappear. And so there's just sort of a few striations of it left. But yeah, it was just the way it all set up so that we did get less. You know, we picked up about 0.8 inches at the airport. So the stuff we've been seeing this afternoon is much lighter, 0.03-0.04 inches. Obviously, it's been a pretty light, almost misty like. But, you know, and we're not going to sneeze at that. Any rain this time of year is good to get in the ground because, despite what people think, winter precipitation snow really is worthless here for drought or ground moisture, because our ground is frozen. It's not like, you know, the mountains or warmer areas where it can, you know, replenish aquifers and things like that. It can affect your lake levels, of course. But as far as ground moisture, we really want to get it in here over these next, you know, several weeks before the ground freezes up, because most of our snow actually evaporates. People don't realize in the winter with very cold, dry air, even though things are frozen and cold air still, or moisture, even frozen moisture still evaporates. It's called sublimation. And when it's in the frozen state, and a lot of it, you know, that's how our snowpack, we average 50+ inches of snow in the winter. Well, where does that all go? Most of that actually evaporates and compaction, and then just a small amount of that actually melts, and most of it, just as we all know, in March runs off of frozen ground and into your storm sewer or lake.
Since you brought up California, I wanted to bring up a stat that you brought in about the reservoirs out there and how low they were. And you say to yourself, great, they're getting this massive influx of water, great. But as you point out, is that their starting point was so low that even with torrential downfalls, it's a nice step forward, but they are still incredibly far behind where they need to be with the amount of water they need in Northern California.
Yeah, I think this was yesterday's weather. I actually showed this map, kind of an overview of reservoirs, and it just basically shows like a little bar for each one of these reservoirs. showing how full it is, you know, like a battery does maybe on your phone or something. And they're all very low. And the highest changes to a couple of the reservoirs were an increase of 4 to 8%. So a lot of water, but they're so far behind. And these reservoirs are admittedly very large too, so it takes a lot to fill them up. But they're just so far behind. We forget that while our drought was a seasonal drought, and that's the benefit of being in a place like Minnesota, our patterns change. Very rare that we have a multi-year drought here. You can have 2 years in a row, but very rare that you have a multi-year drought. We're talking about a decade-long drought in the West. So they've got a lot of just the 1 year rainfall deficit for that northern part of California. I'm going to show this tomorrow. They're a foot behind for water. So 1 4-inch rainfall, yes, is awesome and makes a dent for sure in the 1 year time frame. But you got to remember, they're a half foot behind every year there for 10 years. Do the math. Some places are 60 inches behind when you look at the decade. And that's why those reservoirs are also low. You combine that with the fact that you have what, the California is it the most or second most populous state? And you have a lot of people living in a place that really doesn't have the resources to support that kind of a population.
God forbid we use it, let that stop us. So we'll be, oh, Arizona.
No. Arizona. The drill.
It's interesting. Yeah. Of course, we a lot of people remembering the 1991 blizzard.
Oh, I always, yes. Everyone has a story.
One of the things I find to be amazing about that is there are two distinct memories we all have from that time frame, and most of the time they never cross over. The World Series win of 1991, and it was only 4 days after that they won that World Series that all of a sudden we were buried in snow after that. That a lot of people will remember the blizzard, they remember the World Series.
Yeah.
They forget the fact that that was 4 days after that incredible World Series victory over the Braves. Basically, Minnesota went back to glacial form. So,
yeah, well, and that's the last time the Twins won a World Series. Hell had frozen over. So, you know, that's what's sort of pathetic about the two. I was 10, so I understand that I don't necessarily put together all the events, but I think it was Kathy Werzer actually had posted some recollection of the World Series. And I was like, oh, gosh, yeah, that was that year. I knew it was 87 and 91, but yeah, I didn't put together the dates. And like, people are all jumping for joy. And that was a different time, too, where our forecasting wasn't as good. So 4 days out, everybody was thinking we might get a couple inches of snow, and you're like, oh boy, here we go. Nobody thought we were gonna get just clobbered like that. That wasn't until about 48 hours out where there were some indications that something might be afoot here. Even then, you're not gonna forecast 2 to 3 feet of snow. But it was quite the year, 91.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, well, everyone has a story. That's when you had a good hip then. Maybe that's what did your hip in.
Actually, I was in the military. That's actually what did my hip in. I was stationed overseas, and I remember I could not get in touch with anyone. I was like, what the heck happened over in Minnesota? I was overseas, and I'm trying to get in touch with people for Halloween and see where it was. Like 2 weeks afterwards, I was finally able to make a call from Germany back home, and they're like, "Oh yeah, the phone lines, everything was down."
You're lucky you were serving your country. Otherwise, I'd have to say you lose some Minnesota street cred if you weren't here. But you get a pass there.
Oh, I don't think I missed too much with that. You bring up the snow showers in there early. There are a lot of people that seem to be out there lamenting the fact that we haven't had snow, which I don't know, you're sickos personally. But you do say, as you mentioned earlier, we are starting to get into this pattern where the chance of a flurry or two or some light snow showers, it's not unlikely. Is there a chance coming up in the next few days we could see some?
Yeah, we're in that time of year where it's inevitable. And I actually, this is something I'm going to talk about tomorrow too. I'd hinted at last week that it's something to keep your eyes peeled for. And now we know that it's going to happen. This is going to go down as a snowless October, which is actually much more rare than people think. That many years we average a trace, which means that you saw snowflakes, but it didn't accumulate, obviously, because the ground was too warm or wet. But at least we had a trace of snow, not enough to measure. But, you know, you had a little patch of white on a dirt spot or a grassy patch here. And actually, only 4 of the last 20 Octobers have been a zero snow October. So this is unusual. I mean, it has been a mild month, but yeah, this is 2016 was the last time we had a zilch snow October. And want to mention, too, on that note, because we've been talking about the rankings, it looks as though we're going to go down as the ninth warmest October. And this will make our sixth month this year out of 10 that has been in a top 20 month, which is incredible. And that's why we're still at fifth warmest year to date. So we'll see again what November, December holds. They would have to be super cold to knock us out of that point at this point. But yeah, next week, we're going to see some legit cold weather, a cold start to November. It's going to be mild this weekend. In fact, I still think there's an outside chance we could hit 60 Saturday, upper 50s, okay, definitely. But then the temperatures drop, and we're talking about low to mid 40s for highs almost all of next week, and overnight lows in the 20s, even in the metro. So, you know, if you just got glanced by the frost, like most of us in the urban core did last weekend, it's game over this weekend. You know, if you're playing that game of putting plants in and out during the day and night, it's kind of no point after next week, because it is going to be legit cold. And whenever you have any precip around when it's that cold, especially if the timing is right in the evening or overnight, early morning when it's colder, we could see some snow showers. So I do think, even in the metro, we could see our first flurries Tuesday or Wednesday. We're not talking about accumulations. Don't worry about that. But I do think places like the Boundary Waters have increasingly a chance of the first accumulating snowfall. And up there, that comes pretty late. You know, yeah, they do. They should get snow up there in October. You know, the average, even for us in the metro, is a half inch, because when you average, you know, a year where you got four and a year where you got a trace, it works out to be about a half inch over the historical record. But this is very late for northern Minnesota not to get a snowfall. So, yeah, it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. And so one of my Facebook followers put it nicely today, like, we've had a pretty nice mild fall. Nobody can really whine that we're finally getting some cold weather and some snow showers.
Real quick, finally, Halloween night, what should we, is it going to be 40s?
Probably, yeah, for Sunday evening. Adults like myself will be celebrating Friday, Saturday. That's the better weather. It's going to be milder in the 50s those evenings. But yeah, I think Sunday evening, it'll we're probably looking at a high around 50 during the afternoon. But once the sun goes down, probably mid to upper 40s, but dry. I mean, so that's pretty good. I know that's probably recall many Halloweens that are way worse than that. So, yeah, you know, mid to upper 40s is pretty good in these parts.
Sven Sundgaard, once again, I will post a link to forecastissoul.com/weather. That's where you get his weather forecast, of course, over at bringmethenews.com and the YouTube channel. Sven, thank you very much. As always, great information. I appreciate it.
You bet. Happy recovery.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll take a break, wrap up the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Always good to talk with Sven. So bundle up. You'll need to, no matter what your kid's costume is going to be on Sunday night, it's going to definitely need a jacket underneath it or something like that, because it'll be a little bit cooler. I do want to remind, one of the main reasons we came back, I'm doing a show injured with my hip as it heals, is Greg Bakken from Ghost Box Radio. He is going to join us tomorrow. As a matter of fact, the entire 5 o'clock hour. Which haunted doll is he going to be doing the show with out there? Do you know, Patrick? Is it Annabelle?
Yep, Annabelle.
Apparently we're doing a show with the haunted Annabelle doll. That can't possibly go wrong. As I'm sitting here alone in my basement. No, not at all. Where is this? Connecticut? Is this guy got this doll at?
Yep, Connecticut.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, the worst part of that trip is Connecticut. I'm sorry. Sorry, Connecticut. What am I doing? As a guy that used to live in Rhode Island, it's not like I'm mocking you because I used to live in Rhode Island. Not at all, Connecticut. So we're going to have Bakken on, get you ready for Halloween, super spooky, scary things. We'll have that as well tomorrow. I should be back for another show. Patrick and Brett, I appreciate it. You guys helped me get this whole thing set up. It's been a lot of fun. I've missed doing this. Back tomorrow, live from the basement. Native Roots Radio, I'm awake. Robert Pilot and crew up next. Until tomorrow, see ya.